are listening to CFRO Community Radio Station on 102.7 FM. The upcoming show, Conscious Living Radio, is a program that explores frontiers of consciousness, spirituality, personal growth, emerging paradigms in psychology, health, science, and innovative philosophies that reflect commitment to the advancement of individual, social, and global transformation.
We're back, and Linda, could you please introduce our next guest?
Yes, we have next here with us at Conscious Living Radio, Michelle Morand. She is a counselor, author, and educator specializing in the field of eating disorders and related concerns for the past 15 years. If you or someone you know struggles with a stressful relationship with food, the question, "Why can't I just stop?" has probably come around. It's very frustrating to have a pattern of behavior that you know doesn't serve you, and yet you seem to be unable to stop it for any consistent length of time. Understanding why you do what you do is the first step in creating lasting change with any unwanted pattern of behavior. Without that knowledge of the why, any change you make will be short-lived. And this is the case with most people. Sheer will just doesn't last long enough. It's understanding and self-love which is the key, which will make sure you succeed in the long term. Once you understand the why, then you can turn to the what now. All right? And the what now refers to tools and skills that you can then use to begin to change those harmful patterns of behavior. And so Michelle Morand is going to be giving a presentation at the Wellness Show this weekend on Saturday at 11 a.m. at the Women in Wellness stage on this topic to help people understand, get a clear understanding of why they get so caught up in using food to cope, all right, as a coping strategy with life. And Michelle, welcome to the Conscious Living Radio.
Thank you.
Yes. So I understand that you've had quite a bit of success in dealing with people that often have found a shortage of success in their life in dealing with behavioral changes. Do you just specialize in terms of weight loss itself, or do you also deal with various other addictions?
Well, we deal with every single harmful coping strategy that human beings engage in. And the reason that the Cedric Center initially established itself as specifically focusing on eating disorders and people who use food to cope is because that's my own personal journey, is the recovery from binge eating disorder. And okay. That's what got me wanting to go into the field of counseling and just create a greater sense of community and support and awareness for other people who are struggling with overeating or restriction or binging and purging. But what I found as I got into that work, and it's actually been 17 years now I've been specializing in this field, what I found is that standard behaviors that people have or just accept, things like procrastination or isolation or avoidance, things like that are also can be very harmful coping strategies.
Right.
And alcohol and drugs and codependency and relationship and gambling and, you know, shopaholism, spending money we don't have, those are also harmful coping strategies, and they all stem from the same place. And so the same tools that we use at the center to help people heal from the use of food to cope work across the board.
Okay. Yeah, and that's one thing I was going to ask is, you know, where do you kind of draw the line where, you know, it's a real problem type of behavior that's involved? You know, say somebody might think, well, I really could stand to lose 20 pounds, whereas somebody else, well, I actually need to lose 100 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, how do you know when you've got a deeper issue going on here with, if it be being, you know, a bit procrastinative, you know, or seriously have a problem with procrastination, or same thing with eating, or whatever it is. Is there a certain kind of line that you cross where you know that, okay, you know, there is a real problem here?
Sure. The thing is, the line that we cross isn't about the behavior itself. It's about how we feel about the behavior.
Okay.
So there are people who can have a couple of glasses of wine a night and not have any issue with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are others for whatever reason, who have those same couple of glasses of wine of night and feel incredibly guilty and shameful and bad and, you know, label themselves as alcoholics, and maybe they are or maybe they aren't, but the whole point is it's the energy that they have around that that makes it an issue or a non-issue as a rule.
Oh, really?
And same with weight. So somebody can have an extra few pounds on their body and really not have a big, not have a lot of energy around it, because overall their life is in balance, they're healthy, they're well, and it's just not a big issue for them. Mm-hmm. Whereas other people can have no extra weight on their body and be preoccupied and 24/7 thinking negative thoughts about their body and about what they just ate or what they shouldn't eat and all of that kind of stuff. So the headspace that someone's bringing to their behavior has a lot more to do with how big of a problem it is than the actual behavior itself.
All right. Oh, that's interesting. So that, so you would run into people, but I'm assuming you'd run into people who drink quite a bit and do like to get intoxicated on a regular basis and seem to only be able to function if they are slightly intoxicated. But yet, I don't know, sometimes I get the impression, I'm just thinking of somebody I know, it seems like they're totally happy with it. I don't know. It seems like, I think you got a problem here, but.
Right.
I don't know if they would agree with that.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, is that one of the things that's understood about certain addictive patterns of behavior is that often it becomes a problem for the people around the person with a behavior before that person even recognizes they have a concern.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's a bit of a separate entity from what I was just speaking about, which is, you know,
okay.
That so often, you know, we might see someone, we might look at two women, for example, who are exactly the same weight.
Mm-hmm.
They're exactly the same body shape and size, and one might be completely content within themselves, and the other might be a ball of anxiety because of how she feels about her physical form.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, the one who is the ball of anxiety has a much greater need or would benefit much more from help at that moment than the other who's completely content,
right.
Regardless of what their weight is.
Right.
But, you know, in reference to your friend with the alcohol problem, perhaps, you know, there is a point at which certain people are using food or drugs or alcohol or, again, gambling or shopping or anything like that in a way to cope that they haven't yet recognized and that is actually causing harm to their life overall or their sense of balance and wellness.
Mm-hmm.
And with people like that, all you can really do is just gently and lovingly and respectfully point out that you're concerned about what you see and hope that they step into some sort of recovery around that.
Right, right. So basically, the issue is probably for anybody and everybody, wouldn't you say, to some degree, it's how do we go about coping with life?
Yeah, that's it. So many of us come out of our family of origin with very few healthy or what we call life-enhancing coping strategies for stress. In fact, so many of us come out of our family of origin thinking that it's not okay to make mistakes, that, you know, it's shameful to mess up in some way or to admit that we're wrong in some way. And that pattern of relating to the world or to other people in our lives just creates a greater sense of anxiety, a greater sense of a need to hide ourselves away and protect ourselves, as opposed to teaching us how to just be real and authentic, let ourselves be as we are, love and respect ourselves, and, you know, realize that life is for learning and, you know, second chances have to be a part of life.
Mm-hmm. Hey, let me just bring up, because, you know, this is a show that focuses more on spirituality and personal growth.
Mm-hmm.
And how about spiritual addictions? You know, where people can become their whole life just revolves around the spiritual. And could that ever sort of be seen as a bit of a coping strategy to deal with even yet deeper issues, but yet it's all the more subtle and concealed because, you know, you're being so spiritual about it, and
right.
You are always on the healing path.
Right.
Are you talking about me, Linda?
No.
Okay. Just checking.
That's an excellent point. That is also a coping strategy people often use because one of the reasons that people turn to spirituality in the first place is to have a greater sense of connection,
mm-hmm.
a greater sense of security, a greater sense of knowing something, And while that is a healthy approach, you know, wanting to feel more safe and secure in the world and wanting to have a sense of knowing something, we can become rigid with that in and of itself. You know, our desire to be self-aware and self-actualizing and, you know, accepting things as they are, whatever our spiritual path is, can actually take on a life of its own that really does lead us to be more distant from others and kind of serves to protect us. And it's that's a sensitive piece, though, because, you know, all of this is, it's very difficult to, you know, invite someone to take a look at something that they're doing that, from a social perspective, is quite well regarded. And there's actually an eating disorder called orthorexia, which is this personified, which is when we approach food from a place of supreme health consciousness, mm-hmm. where we won't eat anything, you know, that isn't within our definition of very healthy food. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we end up restricting a lot, or we're actually engaging in that as a form of restriction. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that socially can be perceived as very, you know, green, very mm-hmm. conscious, very aware, very well-intended. But again, it's the underlying thoughts and feelings that the person is bringing to the behavior, the needs that they are seeking to meet through whatever their behavior is what we want to take a look at, not the behavior itself.
Mm-hmm. So if the behavior is intended to cover up some anxiety,
yes.
and in the process is creating more anxiety,
yes.
Then obviously it does not. But the question I had, because you mentioned earlier that this is some form of coping with stress, as if stress is something that needs to be coped with.
Yeah.
Or is there a life possible where stress is something that is part, it's almost like a signal that our body, our mind, our soul sends us that we're not on the path that we're supposed to be, or that we're not on our full potential.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're not. The language that I use is that we have needs that aren't being met when we feel anxious or unsettled or stressed. Or, you know, you're using the language, you know, we're off our path.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not really, we're whatever it is, either we're thinking about making choices that aren't honoring, or we're engaged in behaviors that aren't honoring us on some level. And that's exactly it. And that's what triggers us to feel unsettled or anxious or stressed, however you want to call it. And as you're saying, Andrew, rather than coping with stress, what we want to do is we want to look beneath it
mm-hmm.
to the unmet needs, or, you know, to the message that energy is sending us, because that's all feelings are. They're just energy about whether our needs are being met or not. When we're peaceful, our needs are being met. When we're not peaceful, we have needs that need attention.
Yeah. And what, from your experience, are the most at the bottom of it? If you keep digging and digging at the bottom of every human being, what is the most important need that, until that need is met, there is going to be always some uneasiness?
Well, okay, I can answer that. I'll answer that in two stages. First and foremost, if we think about a very well-regarded philosophy and approach to human beings and why they do what they do, is Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of basic human needs. And the hierarchy talks about different levels of need, and they need to be met in ascending order. And the most fundamental basic needs that humans have are the physiological needs for food, air, and water. Makes perfect sense. We're naturally going to feel quite panicked if our airway is cut off, or if we don't have water after a few days, or if we don't have access to food. An obvious answer to your question is those things. But in our society, the majority of us are fortunate enough to not even have to consider whether those needs will be met.
Mm-hmm.
And the next level of need on the hierarchy are the physical safety and security needs. So that speaks to shelter. It speaks to living in an environment where there isn't actual physical harm or the threat of physical harm. And many of us in our society, again, are fortunate enough to live in that environment, but many of us aren't. So that's where most people that we'll work with at the Cedric Center are coming in either on that level or the next level up, which is what Maslow referred to as love, acceptance, and belongingness. And I refer to that as the emotional security needs. And so that's when we have relationships with others that aren't meeting our needs. We're not feeling secure in them. We don't trust that we are loved or accepted or that we belong in those connections. So either the physical safety and security or the love, acceptance, and belongingness or emotional security, those are the two places where we're most likely to feel the greatest sense of anxiety or dis-ease.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead, sorry.
But actually, I was hoping for something even another level above that.
The esteem needs.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and the self-actualization needs, absolutely. So, but in answer to your question, most people who are using harmful coping strategies of any kind are operating with either the physical safety and security and or the emotional safety and security needs not typically or fundamentally having been met for them.
Is it possible, though, mm-hmm. that if our purpose, if our, you know, as a human being, if we do come here with a certain purpose, certain gift, in order to serve instead of being served, and as is it possible that as long as that need is not fulfilled, mm-hmm. we're going to express our needs on other levels, on the physical. But if our like when I look at Mother Teresa, mm-hmm. I don't think, even though when she was hungry or didn't have clean water or shelter, I don't think she was really stressed about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that I guess, philosophically, I have a thought about that or a perspective on that, which may or may not sit with you and what you're suggesting. But the next level on Maslow's hierarchy is the esteem level, and then on top of that is the self-actualization, and that's what you're speaking to, I think, is that sense of, we all have this innate sense of purpose, mm-hmm. some gift we're meant to make manifest in the world. And when we're not doing that, even if we're not conscious of what that is yet, we do naturally feel a sense of agitation or distress.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely right. As a rule, if all those lower level needs are met and we're sitting solidly in a place of self-confidence and also known as esteem, even if our self-actualization needs aren't being met, we're not going to feel inherently insecure and the depths of anxiety or distress that would lead us to a harmful coping strategy. We're just going to be starting to ask the questions, what do I need to do to make manifest that gift? You know, I have the confidence and the security within myself to do that. And I don't know, I can't speak for Mother Teresa, but my sense of that is that probably, at least my understanding of her, is that earlier in her life, those needs were met for her. And so she could let go of them, in essence, and just trust in the bigger picture, trust in herself, trust in her place, trust in the gift that she was meant to make manifest and just do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think that's inherently what we're all striving for, is that sense of supreme embodiment of that trust and that mm-hmm. sense of peace and spaciousness mm-hmm. that it brings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's sort of the sense that I have. It's to, it seems like there's a shifting of one's sense of identity, core identity.
Yes.
If it's just simply identified with the immediate physical mm-hmm. satisfaction of getting the physical needs met of what or whatever, because this is all I am,
yes.
then yeah, there's mega stress. But if there's a shifting of identity to something that transcends
yes.
this immediate body, that expands that smaller self,
mm-hmm.
then you're not going to be threatened. It's not going to threaten your sense of self if
exactly.
if something happens to, you know, the conditioned self or the physical self or whatever
exactly.
you want to call it, or a lot of people call it the ego or whatever, but
yeah.
it's a bit of a language thing.
I agree. There's much more space within us, from that higher self or mm-hmm. higher sense to just be understanding, to have that greater empathy and compassion for ourselves and others, and then that just continues to flourish and grow.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's we are preoccupied with trying to answer those questions. You know, what needs are not fulfilled, and we go after, you know, those physical needs and those shelter needs, and we buy bigger houses, and we get cleaner water, and we get you know, better food, and so on. Where you know, I think at the bottom of it, and this is just me. I think at the bottom of it is this unfulfilled need to actually live in accordance with the purpose, with the gift that I came here to serve.
The self-realization.
Yeah. it's even even the self-realization, I don't necessarily like the because it's still directing at self, where it's I think the bottom of it, it's not about self, it's about others. It's about being of service in some form. And we don't even have a language for that. See, that's the.
Well, I think you know, it depends on whether you're using big S or little S for self, and it's hard to do that on the radio.
Yes.
But you know, yes, we all you know, and even, you know, what you were saying a minute ago, Andrew, about, you know, bigger houses and things like that. It all depends on how you define needs, doesn't it? Because for many people, just having a roof over your head meets that need, whereas for others, because of that higher level need of acceptance and approval and what that means to them, how they've been taught to perceive that, you know, what they have to do or be, or, you know, where they need to be in order to be acceptable. And then, you know, and the story, of course, in their heads is, once other people accept me or approve of me, I can rest, I can be at peace. There's not even a necessarily a consciousness that there is something more that they can aspire to, or that they could actually sidestep that whole thing just by beginning to practice those two wings of the dove and offer themselves empathy and compassion and start to really expand on a whole nother level. And so many people just aren't given the gift of realizing that.
So is that what you would say? You just mentioned the two wings of the dove, empathy and compassion. Is that sort of the key thing as far as helping to resolve this whole dilemma?
Absolutely. And so what we do, because what we understand is that people who are using harmful coping strategies, they're not at this place that you're speaking to, Andrew, of having that. They might have some conscious awareness of, you know, spirituality, and may even engage in certain spiritual practices. But if we're using harmful coping strategies, the implication is that we still feel like we need something from outside of ourselves to be a certain way in order for us to be okay. And so the important thing is that people start to have that, they have tools, very simple tools that they can use that help them to recognize when they're out of alignment or off the path or have needs that aren't being met, however you want to refer to it. And instead of judging that or shying away from it or running away from it and heading for food or the bottle or whatever it happens to be, that instead they're able to say, oh, this feeling that I'm having or this sensation or this desire to eat right now when I'm not hungry simply means that I have needs that aren't met, or that something is stirring in me that needs attention. Here, let's pull out this tool here and have a look at what that might be. And so our role with people is to teach them three very simple tools that help them to really feel like it's safe to be in the present moment and that they are fully capable within themselves of meeting their needs.
And you are going to have two of those type of presentations and teachings during the wellness show next weekend.
Yes, that's right. On the Saturday, I'm teaching a workshop at 5:45. That really, what we're going to be talking about are barriers to optimum health. And, you know, based on the conversation we've just had, what that means for me is thoughts that we're carrying about ourselves, and really this aspect of what we call learned helplessness, or all-or-nothing thinking, where we get really caught up in our brain with a certain way of being and certain beliefs about ourselves that prevent us from even, you know, following through on some basic steps towards self-care and health, even following through on our doctor's orders when we have very critical health concerns. Very few people actually do that. And so the chat on Saturday is going to be about why we don't step forward to be the best that we can be and how to move past that. And then on Sunday, I'm giving a presentation about why we use food to cope or other harmful coping strategies.
And more information about work you do and lectures that you're going to be offering during wellness shows, I'm sure they're on your webpage, are they?
Yes, they're on our website at cedriccenter.com. That's CedriccenterE.com. And they're also on the wellness website as well for the wellness show. And Cedric Center has a blog that has a lot of articles and information as well, so people can get lots of tools for free. That's part of our mandate, is to be able to meet the needs of as many people as possible, regardless of their funds and where they live in the world.
Perfect. Mm. Well, thank you so much, and see you next weekend.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you, Michelle.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Again, just to remind listeners, it is time to renew membership. We have a drive that happens once a year, and we invite you to become a member here at Co-op Radio by providing a donation of $60. And for your membership, you get many, many benefits. You will have mailed to you a listener's guide, as well as a tax receipt for your donation, as well as many other benefits. So do check out at cooperadio.org if you want more information about this. And again, this is a listener-supported station. Without that support, we would not be here. So we invite you to send in your donation. Thank you so much. We appreciate your being listeners here to Conscious Living Radio.
And we're inviting you to listen to us every Wednesday from 6 to 7. If you have missed the show or were not able to listen to the entire program, you can find more info on consciouslivingradio.org.
To the physical difference, to the physical omnipotence. Your smile,
you have been listening to Conscious Living Radio, a program that explores frontiers of consciousness, spirituality, personal growth, the emerging paradigms in psychology, health, science, and innovative philosophies that reflect a commitment to the advancement of individual, social, and global transformation. Tune in every Wednesday from 6 to 7 p.m. to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. For information about our past and future programming and free downloads of shows, go to consciouslivingradio.org. Yeah.